The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop looking out over London.
Good night and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
All right, we made it to a Thursday. These weeks just plod along, don't they? I'm Nicole Sandler. Welcome to the show here at NicoleSandler.com. Of course, we're heard on Progressive Voices Network weeknights or Tuesday through Friday evenings at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 Pacific. We're on GDPR, FYI Nation, Netroots Radio, and a bunch of other outlets, and we thank everyone who carries the show and everyone who listens. And on top of that, I really need to thank the people who contribute. As I say all the time, and probably not often enough for my pocketbook, this show is 100% listener supported, meaning we're like public radio, except I don't have any underwriters, no corporations or companies coming through with dollars to help support what we do. It's all through you. So if you appreciate the show and are in a position to do so, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. All the details are at NicoleSandler.com/donate. Those of you who do, I cannot thank you enough. Yesterday, I had a weird thing happen right at the beginning of the show. I started seeing this, it's impossible to describe, this weird, almost electronic-looking thing. And as I told you, it was an ocular migraine, and I got more emails yesterday. People saying, "How did you get through a show with a migraine?" It's painless. It's one of those weird phenomena that I never knew what it was until I Googled it. It's almost like an electronic-looking paisley design, and it starts out as a little circle right in the center of the field of vision, and it gradually, over the course of about 30 minutes, gets larger and larger, so that it then is sort of like a circle around the field of vision, and then it goes away. But right when the show started, this thing started, and it happens very sporadically, very rarely. But yeah, you can't see. I couldn't read anything. It's happened to me probably half a dozen to a dozen times in my life. Doesn't happen that often. I haven't had it in maybe close to a year now. But boy, right at the start of yesterday's show, it popped up. So if I was more disconcerted, more sort of discombobulated than usual, that's the reason why. But for those of you who wrote concerned that I got through the show, almost like a kaleidoscope. Yeah. Just a really weird thing. After about 20 minutes, it got much better. But there was no pain involved. Believe me, if I had a regular migraine with that kind of pain, that's the day I would take the day off. Just so you know, I'm a bit of a masochist, but I'm not that bad. Anyway, today was another busy day. It started off with the president losing one of his lawyers, but I was just reading something on Twitter. Laffy had an interesting thread. Let me see if I can pull it up here real quick. I just had it here. She's quoting from, I think, a new Vanity Fair article written by Gabriel Sherman, with Trump saying, "Now I'm going to fucking do it my way." Jubilant and liberated, Trump prepares for war with Mueller. Here's a quote. One outside advisor to the White House said Trump has recently mulled the concept of creating a new West Wing structure without a chief of staff, one that would instead have four co-equal principals reporting directly to him. This is unbelievable. This guy takes chaos to a whole new level. She continues, Trump seems to be loving his new freedom. Quote, he was fucking excited and jubilant, said one Trump friend who spoke to him in recent days. He was like, everything's great and these fuckers in the media are beside themselves. In private, Trump's friends and outside advisors have been stoking his desire to go on the offensive for months. Trump has heard that his lawyers are idiots, that Mueller's probe is a coup d'etat, and that Trump's only crime is having, quote, won the election. It continues, Mr. Popularity, quote, no heavy-hitting white shoe law firm seems to want to represent him. Before hiring Ty Cobb last summer, Trump was turned down by major white shoe law firms that would have normally jumped at the opportunity to represent a president. He's talking about hiring, what's his name? The new guy that he hired, whose name is, and I lost it, the one who's on Fox, you know, so-called news, Joseph DeGenova, his wife. So hiring his wife, her name is Tone Singh, would be a sign Trump wants to flip the script and investigate his investigators. Appearing on Fox, Tone Singh has called for a second special prosecutor to investigate Mueller, the logic being that he was FBI director at the time that Uranium One acquisition was approved. This is like a bad trip down the rabbit hole. You know, he's also talking about bringing Kasowitz back. Remember Kasowitz, who's still one of his private attorneys, but hasn't been working on any of the official White House stuff. She continues reading from this Vanity Fair article. Kasowitz's return would be a signal that Trump is willing to put his own survival ahead of his family. A month before Kasowitz was ousted, a former White House official told me he had told Trump that Jared Kushner needed to leave the White House. Well, Jared Kushner does need to leave the White House, but that's besides the point. Anyway, all this just underscores the chaos that's going on in the White House and a day that other stuff happened as well. Which we'll get to in just a second in What's News. Today is Thursday, so Howie Klein will be here. And there's, Shalel in the chat room says soon the entire cabinet will be just Fox News. And we have more than three years of this stuff left, or about 3 years of this stuff left. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. All right, before we get to Howie Klein, let's do What's News. And since I can read again today, we'll do it live, shall we?
I read the news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
The president today took the first steps toward imposing tariffs on $50 to $60 billion is what he said when the cameras were on him, in Chinese goods and limiting China's ability to invest in U.S. technology, saying the moves were a response to Beijing's history of forcing U.S. companies to surrender their trade secrets to do business in China. He directed the U.S. trade representative to announce a proposed list of products to be hit with tariff increases within 15 days. The stock market has been down sharply all day in response. John Dowd, one of Donald Trump's top personal lawyers, stepped down today from the president's legal team just days after calling for special counsel Robert Mueller's Russia probe to be shuttered. Jay Sekulow, another member of the Trump legal team, said in a statement, quote, John Dowd has been a valuable member of our legal team, and we will continue our ongoing cooperation with the Office of Special Counsel regarding this inquiry. Dowd's resignation came several days after Trump added Joseph DeGenova, a former U.S. attorney who was pushing an aggressive new strategy to his team. And it's his wife, who I just mentioned, is also being floated as a possible addition to the team. The House today passed a $1.3 trillion federal spending bill, although the 2,200-plus page bill was released just 52 hours before a government shutdown deadline. The omnibus bill doles out spending for the remainder of fiscal year 2018 until September 30th. Hey, Mitch, what's in it?
Pleased to report that the appropriations package is currently being finalized. I'll have more to say once the bill has been filed, but I'm proud to announce
it's been filed.
A number of vitally important objectives. This includes the largest year-on-year increase in funding for our service members in 15 years, along with major steps forward for law enforcement and border security, for the fight against opioid addiction, for our veterans, and for a number of other priorities.
The bill includes $1.6 billion for Trump's border wall, although he asked for $25 billion, but it also bumps up funding for both Customs and ICE. It also includes the Fix NICS Act, a bipartisan legislation aimed at improving the national instant criminal background check system that's used to screen U.S. gun buyers. The bill increases funding to tackle the opioid epidemic, a boost that lawmakers from both parties hailed as a win. The legislation allocates more than $4.65 billion across agencies to help states and local governments on efforts toward prevention, treatment, and law enforcement initiatives. That represents a $3 billion increase over 2017 spending levels. We'll see what happens with that. And the bill includes hundreds of millions of dollars to combat potential interference from Russia or others in the November midterm election, although it should be noted that not a cent has been spent on that prevention yet. The Senate still has to pass the bill, and Trump must sign it by midnight Friday in order to avoid a government shutdown. There is some rumblings that Rand Paul may try to hold it up again. We'll see. After being missing in action since the Cambridge Analytica story broke, Facebook's Mark Zuckerberg surfaced Wednesday night for an interview on CNN in which he sort of apologized.
This was a major breach of trust, and I'm really sorry that this happened. You know, we have a basic responsibility to protect people's data, and if we can't do that, then we don't deserve to have the opportunity to serve people. So our responsibility now is to make sure that this doesn't happen again. And there are a few basic things that I think we need to do to ensure that. One is making sure that developers like Alexander Kogan, who got access to a lot of information and then improperly used it, just don't get access to as much information going forward. So we are doing a set of things to restrict the amount of access that developers can get going forward. But the other is we need to make sure that there aren't any other Cambridge Analytica's out there, right? Or folks who have improperly accessed data. So we're going to go now and investigate every app that has access to a large amount of information from before we lock down our platform. And if we detect any suspicious activity, we're going to do a full forensic audit and make sure that no one out there is improperly using data. And that's, I think, the responsibility that we have to people in our community.
Yeah, a responsibility that you've had that you've not followed through on. Zuckerberg was asked if he'll testify before Congress.
Lawmakers in the United States and the UK are asking you to testify. Everybody wants you to show up. Will you testify before Congress?
So the short answer is I'm happy to if it's the right thing to do. You know, Facebook testifies in Congress regularly on a number of topics.
But
some
you haven't.
Some not. And our objective is always to provide Congress with this extremely important job to have the most information that they can. Right? We see a small slice of activity on Facebook, but if Congress gets to have access to the information across Facebook and all other companies and the intelligence community and everything. So what we try to do is send the person at Facebook who will have the most knowledge about what Congress is trying to learn. So if that's me, then I am happy to go. What I think we found so far is that typically there are people whose whole job is focused on an area, but I would imagine at some point that that there will be a topic where I am the sole authority on and it will make sense for me to do it. And I'd be happy to do it at that point.
It would be about time. He was also asked about interference in the 2018 elections.
Do you think that bad actors are using Facebook at this moment to meddle with the U.S. midterm elections?
I'm sure someone's trying, right? And I'm sure that there's, V2 of all, version 2 of whatever the Russian effort was in 2016. I'm sure they're working on that, and there are going to be some new tactics that we need to make sure that we observe and get in front of.
Do you know what speaking of getting in front of them, do you know what they are? Do you have any idea?
I mean,
no.
Yes, and I think we have some sense of the different things that we need to get in front of.
Are you specifically seeing bad actors try to meddle with the U.S. election now?
Yes.
I'm not 100% sure what that means, because I think that the candidates are not.
Are you seeing anything new or interesting?
Well, what we see are a lot of folks trying to sow division. Right. So that was a major tactic that we saw Russia try to use in the 2016 election. Actually, most of what they did was not directly, as far as we can tell from the data that we've seen, was not directly about the election, but was more about just dividing people. And, you know, so they'd run a group on, you know, for pro-immigration reform, and then they'd run another group against immigration reform and just try to pit people against each other. And a lot of this was done with fake accounts that we can do a better job of tracing and using AI tools to be able to scan and observe a lot of what is going on. And I'm confident that we're going to do a much better job.
Facebook's Mark Zuckerberg coming out of hiding to talk to CNN last night. More details are emerging about the Austin bomber who blew himself up yesterday morning after being hunted down by the FBI and local SWAT teams. Although the guy was a terrorist, that's the only thing you can call a person who terrorized an entire city for a month. A terrorist. His family and neighbors are describing him as smart and a kind computer geek, saying this isn't the person that they knew. This from NBC News.
Tonight, as federal investigators scour the bomber's home and find what multiple sources call a treasure trove of bomb-making materials, authorities have found a 25-minute video confession recorded on his phone.
It is the outcry of a very challenged young man talking about challenges in his personal life.
Now, a portrait of the serial bomber is emerging. Two law enforcement officials identify him as 23-year-old Mark Condit. He lived in Pflugerville, was homeschooled, the oldest of four kids. Condit took classes at Austin Community College, though he never graduated. In a series of school blog posts, Condit wrote that he was not politically inclined. He'd worked as a computer repairman and had no criminal record.
He was a kid, neighborhood kid. I always believed that he was very smart.
And tonight, we're getting new details about the massive manhunt to track him down. NBC News has learned from multiple senior law enforcement officials that police identified the bomber's signature as foreign exotic batteries bought online from Asia. Investigators also use cell phone tower analysis of bombing scenes to narrow down potential suspects. Sunday night, Condit makes his first key mistake, seen here going into a FedEx store wearing a blonde wig, mailing two bombs. That disguise helping give him away.
It kind of alerted some witnesses that this seemed like it wasn't right, and some witnesses were able to identify the vehicle that he was in.
By Tuesday night, police zero in on Condit when he turns on his cell phone. Before tactical vehicles can arrive, Condit drives off and pulls into a ditch, where after 2 a.m., a SWAT team confronts him.
The suspect detonated a bomb inside the vehicle.
Authorities say he bought the materials for his six bombs that left two dead and four others seriously injured at a local Home Depot.
All right. The Federal Reserve hiked its key interest rate to the highest level since 2008 yesterday, according to the Washington Post. The Fed lifted the rate from 1.5% to 1.75% and expects to raise rates three more times this year. Watch out. It's the Fed's first major move under its new chairman, Jerome Powell. And fallout still coming from Trump's call to Vladimir Putin yesterday, congratulating the dictator on his, quote, electoral win. Some, even in the president's own party, are not too happy. This is Ben Sasse speaking on the floor of the Senate.
As to this decision to fail to condemn Putin's sham reelection, it's very foolhardy. Vladimir Putin is not a friend. Vladimir Putin is a despot. The president of the United States was wrong to congratulate him, and the White House press secretary was wrong to duck a simple question about whether or not Putin's reelection was free and fair. It was not. The American people know that, the Russian people know that, and the world knows that. And yesterday, when the White House refused to speak directly and clearly about this matter, we were weakened as a nation, and a tyrant was strengthened.
Now, you heard him say that the president was warned not to congratulate Putin. The fact that that news has gotten out, that it was in his briefing materials, do not congratulate, is rankling some of the people within the West Wing, including the president and his chief of staff, John Kelly.
President Trump fired up and infuriated over yet another leak, this time about his call with Russian President Vladimir Putin. After the president said this Tuesday,
I had a call with President Putin and congratulated him on the victory, his electoral victory.
It stirred outrage. Republicans and Democrats wondering once again why the president didn't take a heavier hand with Putin, scolding him for Russian election meddling or the poisoning of a former Russian spy in Britain.
I haven't heard anybody over in the legislative branch say they thought that was a great idea.
And this is like congratulating Saddam Hussein when he got 98% of the vote in the Iraqi elections.
But it turns out the president didn't follow the script from his national security advisors, who wrote in all capital letters, "Do not congratulate," in his Putin briefing papers. A Washington Post report about the president ignoring that advice sparked recriminations today in the West Wing. White House Chief of Staff John Kelly launching an investigation, specifically targeting anyone from the national security team who may be trying to undermine the president. One senior White House official telling CNN, someone leaked the president's briefing papers. Leaking such information is a fireable offense and likely illegal. Another official said, this is unacceptable. With the federal government closed for the unseasonal spring snowstorm, the White House canceled the president's public schedule. But that didn't stop him from lashing out once again at the Russia probe. As the president gets closer to deciding whether to sit down with special counsel Robert Mueller, he tried again today to discredit the investigation. In a tweet filled with misspellings, he quoted lawyer Alan Dershowitz, who wrote, I think President Trump was right when he said there never should have been a special counsel appointed because there was no probable cause for believing that there was any crime, collusion, or otherwise, or obstruction of justice. On Capitol Hill, Republicans have roundly rejected the president's criticism of the special counsel.
I don't agree with that. My advice to the president from the beginning has been that he should have no comment whatsoever on Mr. Mueller's investigation until it is completed.
That, of course, Senator Susan Collins, with some good advice that the president will not heed, of course. And that's a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports, as I mentioned earlier, I hope you'll consider a contribution. You can find out more at NicoleSandler.com/donate. Today is Thursday. Howie Klein will be here. There was an election. It was primary day in Illinois on Tuesday. And sadly, the outcome that we wanted in Illinois' 3rd district didn't happen. But Howie's got some thoughts on that. It came close. So we should take some solace in knowing that. But when it comes to elections, close is not good enough, as we're learning, sadly, more and more each day. Close ain't no cigar. So we'll talk to Howie in a few minutes. But first, we'll check in with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen in the Green News Report.
It's Thursday, March 22, 2018.
If you had a message for Washington right now, what would it be?
We need help. Please.
Puerto Rico still in the grip of crisis 6 months after Hurricane Maria, while new documents reveal Trump's FEMA failed to respond to calls for assistance.
We see it in bottle after bottle, and we see it in brand after brand.
Your bottled water is likely contaminated with microscopic plastic. Plus,
the world's last male northern white rhino has died.
Another charismatic species slips into extinction because of humans.
All of those stories and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Ivanka has been getting some heat for tweeting this picture of herself dressed like Science Barbie. Just like a real Barbie, she has no scientific credentials, and the space where her heart should be is a hollow plastic shell.
Oh, harsh. This is your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, I've got something that will suffice today for some good news.
And we could use it.
The $1.3 trillion government-wide spending bill released late on Wednesday rejects
Donald Trump's proposal to slash the EPA budget by 31%. Senior lawmakers have given the agency $8.1 billion for fiscal year 2018. That keeps the spending levels the same as it was in 2017. So it still needs to pass both houses of Congress before Friday, when the government could shut down if this doesn't pass. But this looks like good news. In addition to that $8.1 billion for the EPA in the main section of the bill, they also give $763 million in another part of the bill for various other EPA programs related to water infrastructure, cleaning up polluted Superfund sites, and so forth.
Well, that is some good news. It's nice that the EPA's budget will get a temporary reprieve.
It is. So now that I've found good news, how are you going to ruin it all for us today?
Well, Tuesday marked 6 months since Hurricane Maria made landfall in Puerto Rico as a Category 4 storm. It caused catastrophic damage and triggered the longest blackout in United States history. Yes, there is progress in the island's recovery, but blackouts are frequent, and more than 100,000 residents are still without power in rural areas. Maria caused roughly $100 billion in damage to Puerto Rico, but Congress so far has approved only $23 billion in disaster assistance. And AP reports only a fraction of that has been spent in Puerto Rico. NPR reports that FEMA has denied 60% of applications to repair homes because many residents don't have documentation to prove they own them. And a new AP report now underscores the federal government's lack of preparation and its botched response. Emails and text messages released by Democratic Representative Elijah Cummings of Maryland indicate that in the week immediately after the hurricane, FEMA officials simply did not respond to desperate requests for fuel supplies from grocery stores and even Walmart, leading to the spoilage of tons of food amid a hunger crisis.
Wasn't that right around the same time that Donald Trump was giving himself an A-plus for his response with FEMA to the crisis?
Yes, it is.
Imagine that.
Meanwhile, a new study finds that rivers are a significant source of plastic pollution in the ocean. Researchers have found that large storms that flood rivers end up washing tons of plastic litter out to sea. One single storm in northwestern England back in 2015 flushed nearly a metric ton of microplastic pollution into the ocean. And plastic in the rivers isn't just polluting the ocean. It's also in your bottled water. A new study finds that plastic bottled water is likely contaminated with microplastic. Researchers at the State University of New York tested more than 250 bottles across 11 brands and found that 93% of those bottled water samples contained tiny microscopic pieces of plastic. In an interview with the BBC, lead researcher Sherry Mason said much more study needs to be done on the health impacts of ingesting plastic.
These are the particles that can make their way across the gastrointestinal tract. We see it in bottle after bottle, and we see it in brand after brand.
The World Health Organization has announced it will launch a study on the effect of microplastics on public health, and some countries have begun phasing out single-use plastic to reduce plastic pollution. Finally, sad news in Kenya, where the world's last male northern white rhino has died. It marks the effective extinction of the subspecies of the iconic animals. All rhino species are being driven to extinction by humans through habitat loss and poaching. The extinction news comes just days after the Trump administration reversed a ban on importation of endangered animal body parts. And just days after Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke announced a new taxpayer-funded commission to promote big game hunting stuffed with big game trophy hunters.
Yep, I knew you would ruin my good news.
Sorry.
For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us worldwide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
These are the sounds of crushed souls, the sounds of despair from former radio personalities languishing in the purgatory of corporate consolidation. These former radio personalities have lost their livelihoods, not because they weren't entertaining or informative, but because they don't meet today's corporate terrestrial broadcast standards of being smelly, overweight douchebags, seething with vein-popping hatred. These radio refugees and their audiences have since migrated to the internet, but their struggle continues as the quest for monetization ensues. Nicole Sandler is leading the way to reestablishing thought-provoking and entertaining radio. And you can help by clicking the donate button on NicoleSandler.com. Donate today, or as much and as often as you can. Dry the tears of listeners by removing the rotting stench of corporate radio. Won't you help?
You're listening to The Nicole Sandler Show on Progressive Voices and NicoleSandler.com.
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and french fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of...
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 orange juice. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acidic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com on The Nicole Sandler Show.
It still makes me laugh every time I hear it. It is Thursday. That means Howie Klein joins us from Down With Tyranny in the Blue America Pack. Hey, Howie.
Hi, Nicole.
How are you doing today?
I'm good. I just got some unpleasant news, but not that unpleasant.
It was unpleasant.
It wasn't catastrophic. But Laura Oatman, who is the progressive running for the Democratic nomination against, that Russian puppet in Orange County.
Dana Rohrabacher?
Thank you, Dana Rohrabacher, yes. So Laura was the progressive in that race, and she was not raising enough money to be competitive, unfortunately. Because the DCCC and the New Dems and the whole establishment was aligned against her. So she finally just said, I'm out. And last night she endorsed Harley Rauda, who's the better of the not so such great candidates. So there's the two that I call the Bobbsey twins, Harley, who I know personally, and Hans, who I don't know at all and don't want to know. And Harley is certainly the better of the two. Neither one of them would be someone I would vote for, but Harley's a kind of decent guy, and to get Dana Rohrabacher out of Congress is probably a good idea to vote for him. I've been saying all along he's probably going to be the winning candidate. He's a better campaigner. He knows what he's doing. You know, if he hadn't joined the New Dems, I could very well see myself being in favor of him. But he did join the New Dems. I told him what a mistake that was, and he doesn't care. And so anyway, he's probably going to win. I'm sure the DCCC is upset because they seem to prefer Hans. And you know what? If the DCCC prefers someone, chances are good that the other one is the better candidate.
Right. It seems that that's how it works these days. It's
absolutely. Earlier today, there was a similar situation where, we've got a great candidate in North Dallas, again, a woman named Lillian Salerno. Mm-hmm. And so they just had their primary there. And the two top candidates, there was a big array of candidates. And the two top ones go on to a May 22nd runoff. And the two top ones included two Obama alumni. They both worked in the Obama administration. Lillian Salerno was one, and the other one is a guy named Colin Allred. But, you know, Lillian was a really, big player, and Colin was someone who was sort of hanging around and maybe shooting some hoops with Obama and, kind of a good guy who Obama liked a lot. Lillian was, is a brilliant woman getting a lot of things done. And she's far the better candidate. And today the DCCC came out and endorsed All Red, the less progressive candidate. They added him to their Red to Blue page. And I don't understand why. I mean, usually when you ask them why they do that, they always try to say, well, the other candidate isn't financially viable. Well, Lillian has double the money that in her war chest that Allred has.
Wow.
So it's a weird kind of thing. It doesn't make sense to me. And they did it anyway. I mean, you know, they always tell me it's not about ideology. It never is. But yet they always pick the less progressive person. They never pick the progressive person, no matter what. And in this case, you know, they're both kind of progressive, but he's more of an establishment guy who's just going to follow orders. And she's an independent free thinker who's more, you know, she lines up policy wise more with the Bernie approach.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the other one, that's who they are. That's what they are. You know, it really makes sense when you look at who the DCCC is endorsing. It would be very wise in a primary. It'd be very wise to look and see who the other candidate is. I'm not saying, you know, just support the other candidate without looking at it, but it always pays to look at it and see, because chances are very good. You know, I don't know, 70% of the time, the DCCC is going to pick the wrong person.
And it's in a case when they should stay out of it. I always thought that the party should stay out of primaries. And
exactly.
I mean, isn't that what they're supposed to remain neutral in the primary and get involved in the general?
Exactly. They should be fighting Republicans, not other Democrats. And what they do is they literally fight progressives. That's what they do.
It's a shame. So we had the primary took place in Illinois on Tuesday, and it wasn't quite in Illinois' third district. Marie Newman put up a great fight.
She did.
Didn't come quite close enough, huh?
Yeah, well, she came very close, but right, she didn't win. You know, I don't remember the final score, but
it was like
a little over
51
1,000 votes separated
to 49,
them.
Right.
You know, I'll tell you something that isn't being spoken about. You know, the district is sort of divided in two. There's the Cook County, you know, though I should say the Chicago City part of the district,
mm-hmm.
and then there, you know, it's called the Bungalow Belt. So that is one part of the district. The other part of the district is the suburbs. Well, Marie Newman killed in the suburbs. She won. She won the suburban part of the district. Where she lost is, guess where? Just where Rahm Emanuel's machine controls the counting of the ballots. That's where she lost. So, I mean, I can't say that they cheated. There were reports that they were cheating. It was funny because I was reading at the same time that there were reports that Putin was stuffing the ballot boxes in Russia.
Yep.
I was reading that, and then I was reading how there were lots of the same type of thing happening in Chicago. So, I mean, that's what it is. I mean, Stalin used to say it doesn't matter who's on the ballot as much as who's counting the votes that's how you determine who wins these elections. You know, Chicago's machine is the most corrupt machine in the country. And they were determined to keep their guy, Lipinski, in. You can do that for one cycle. You can't do it again. I talked with Marie yesterday and tried to persuade her to run again in 2020. And she's actively, very actively thinking about it. I'm hoping she will. And I think she will. My guess is that she will.
Well, that's great. I mean, she came very close and from a huge deficit.
Closer than anyone has ever come, ever, ever. And since he sort of wormed his way into office, people thinking that he was his father. His father was the congressman before him. And, you know, most voters didn't even know that there was a change.
And there was a change a while ago, though. Dan Lipinski has been in office for a few terms, hasn't he?
Yes, he has. Absolutely. But it was like a seamless switch from the father to the son,
right,
without people actually knowing what had happened.
Right.
You know, the father gets out at the last minute. It's too late for anybody to organize a campaign. And yet the son's campaign is completely organized and ready to go.
Of course.
That's the way they do it. Speaking of which, by the way,
yes,
there's a very, very similar situation in Queens, New York, a district that the 14th District of New York that encompasses part of Queens and part of the Bronx. And when that district, it was the same kind of thing. There was a longtime congressman, Minton, just some do-nothing backbencher who was just there forever. And when he decided to retire, it was the last minute, and the boss of the Queens County Democratic Party machine, just a hack politician named Joe Crowley, just stepped in. And again, no one had any time to organize any opposition, and he just became the congressman. Suddenly he's the congressman, and he has never fought a race. He's never, there are no Republicans there. And there are, so the district doesn't have Republicans, and he's never had an effective challenge from any Democrat. Mm-hmm. So it's a very, very similar situation, except it's a far more dangerous situation because no one listened to Lipinski. No one cared what Lipinski thought. Lipinski was in a world of his own, not a Democrat, not quite a Republican, just this, blue dog thing that was in Congress that no one paid any attention to. Crowley is the exact opposite. He's been chosen by Nancy Pelosi and Steny Hoyer to be the next Democratic leader. He's the post-Pelosi leader. And so there's a few reasons why that's terrible. The next leader, chances are, will be the Speaker of the House, which will be the second in command. The second in succession to the president.
Right.
So if something happens to Trump and Pence, this guy would be president.
Oh my God.
So who is this guy? Most Americans don't have any idea who he is. But I'll sum it up real quick. There is no Democrat in Congress more corrupt in the most blatant way than Joe Crowley. Joe Crowley is the connection between the Wall Street bankers and the Democratic caucus. A lot of Democrats who want the money don't want to be seen to be taking money from the bad guys, and Wall Street being the top of the bad guys, but not just Wall Street, big pharma, private prisons, all the really terrible corporate entities that people, decent human beings don't want to be associated with. Well, the way to do that is there are some really scummy Democrats who have no problem taking money from these people. And they divvy the money up by power. They buy power, B-U-Y, power,
right,
inside the caucus by giving that money. So they'll get the money from Wall Street, say, and then they'll give it out to their colleagues, and then the colleagues owe them. So the colleagues are taking money from Joe Crowley. They're not taking money from Wall Street, even though it's Wall Street money. So Crowley has taken more money from Wall Street than any other Democrat in the House, anyone who's serving in the House now. So more than Hoyer, more than Pelosi, more than all the crooks, he's the biggest crook. And he's buying power. That's what he's doing. He's ready. They're ready to elect him. And, we talked about this. You and I talked about this in terms of Debbie Wasserman Schultz. At one time, she was going to make a run for Speaker.
Right.
And she had a bunch of really crooked corporations backing her, primarily private prisons.
Sure.
Private prisons used to give huge amounts of money to Debbie Wasserman Schultz, and she would share that money with her fellow Democrats and thereby buy power. Now she's so disgraced herself that she's out of the running, so we don't have to worry about her. But to be honest, how I dislike her. Crowley's worse, or Crowley's just as bad. It's hard to say anyone's worse than her, but Crowley is just as bad. Real, real corrupt. The machine party boss of Queens, a real sleazy character, owned by Wall Street, lock, stock, and barrel. And he's far more dangerous than Lipinski could ever be because he's going to get power. Could you imagine this guy being president of the United States? It's unthinkable.
No.
And no one even knows who he is, except insiders. And that is the key. What I just said. Except insiders. You know who doesn't know who he is? The people in his own district. That used to be kind of like an Italian and Irish white Catholic district when he was coming up in politics. That district is now 70% people of color, and most of them have never heard of Joe Crowley, even though he's their congressman. They have never heard of him. They do not vote for him. He's never had, I mean, the last time he had a primary, he had 5,000 votes. That's it.
Wow.
No one knows who he is. He doesn't live in the district. He lives in Virginia. He doesn't come to the district. I mean, literally never comes there. And he has no connection to the district. Now the good news.
Okay.
There is a woman named Alexandria Ocasio who is amazing. She is amazing. I've just spent like 2 days talking to her on the phone. Blue America had endorsed her some time ago, and she is just absolutely brilliant. She's everything that he's not, and she is going full bore against this guy. And it's a completely under the radar grassroots campaign. She's doing what he never does. She has an army of volunteers. They are knocking on every door in the district, and people have never heard of Crowley. They don't even know he's their congressman. And she's very, very likable. She's a smart young woman who looks great. She's really, really attractive, in not just in a physical level, but on a intellectual level.
Mm-hmm.
And she knows what people in that district are concerned about, and that's what she talks with them about. And you know, it would be the number one for the establishment. It would be the number one outrage of the entire cycle. If Alexandria Ocasio wins this one, I mean, you'll be hearing lots and lots more about this. Anyone who reads Down with Tyranny will be hearing lots and lots more about this. We'll be writing about it from, you know, just the same way we wrote about the Marie Newman versus Dan Lipinski race. We're gonna be trying to do what we can to make sure that everyone is aware of Alexandria Ocasio.
Great
candidate.
Great. Now we need some of the, like with Marie Newman, she got the endorsements of the Progressive Change Campaign Committee and some of the other progressive groups. That's what we need for Alexandria Ocasio.
And she's starting to get them too. I mean, she is being supported by Justice Democrats.
Oh, good.
And Blue America. And I'm, you know, encouraging her to start to work with the PCCC and DFA. I think when I was talking, I've been talking to her about DFA, and she's saying, "Oh yeah, they're endorsing me." And I'm thinking, "They are?" I mean, she's kind of, she's, I don't want to use the word extreme, but she's, you know, she's, let's use the word cutting edge. She's very, very cutting edge for them. And I was surprised that she said that they're endorsing her. And I think that's great, but
that's great.
It makes me feel good that they would go that far. But then it turned out it was DSA, not DFA, Democratic Socialists of America. But I still encouraged her to get in touch with the DFA people and to go through their process. It's worth it. And you never can tell. I mean, you know, I doubt they'll find her on their own, but they may get turned on to the things she has to say, because in reality, the things that she has to say are the same things that they have to say. Very, very, you know, forthright, progressive. She's not going to be taking orders from anybody. She's not going to sit there and wait for Nancy Pelosi to come and tell her, this is what we're voting on. This is how we need you to vote. That's not Alexandria Ocasio.
Great. Well, I'm glad to hear that he's got a challenger, because, as you said, he's been running unopposed for so long, and he's ready to slide in. You know, a question from the chat room. I just lost her name, but a woman, if I can find her, asked, so what do we do? I mean, what we do is we become involved. We vote. We let friends and neighbors know. If you're in New York, you seek out Alexandria Ocasio and you volunteer for her. Right? I mean,
that's right. The volunteering part is the most important part, more important than anything else, because her whole campaign is a grassroots campaign based on her volunteers. That is the most important thing.
And it's not only there. I mean, if you don't happen to be in Queens or the Bronx in this district, you go to the Blue America webpage and you can get there from downwithtyranny.com. There's a Blue America box there. I put a link on my blog each week when you're on with me, Howie. Go there, find the candidates who Blue America has endorsed, and find the ones that are running in your district. Hopefully you have one and you get out and volunteer for them. I mean, the primary season, this is the most important time of the electoral process.
Exactly. But a lot of people don't understand that. They don't understand why primaries are important. They just think, hey, any Democrat is better than a Republican. And you know, I can understand why people would say that. And chances are they're right. I mean, you're not going to, it's very rare, almost non-existent, that you'll ever find a Republican that's better than a Democrat. These days it doesn't happen. And when I was a child, it happened more often. Now it's almost never. But we're in primary season. We have a chance to make sure that it's really good Democrats instead of terrible Democrats. I mean, Lipinski is a terrible Democrat. And we had a chance for a really, really good Democrat, and we missed it by about 1,000 votes.
Right.
And that shouldn't happen. That doesn't need to happen.
No. You know, there's also, when it comes down to the general election, there's the question of which party controls the chamber. And as you said, whoever, you know, whichever party is in the majority in the House, their leader is the Speaker of the House. That person is third in line for the presidency. There are reasons why in the general you may, and I know you don't do it, Howie, but some of us will hold our nose and vote for the lesser of two evils.
Did it for my life. I stopped doing it. I figure I'm old enough to, if I'm old enough to get Medicare, I'm old enough to no more lesser of two evils for me.
Right. And I'm still in the boat where I'll do it if I have to get the Republicans out of power. If the Republicans didn't run both the House and the Senate, things wouldn't be quite as horrific as they are right now.
Absolutely.
So what else is going on? I wanted to ask, did you ever get involved in gubernatorial races, or you pretty much you deal with Congress, with Blue America?
Well, is our main thing, but we do get involved. I mean, we endorse people. In fact, I think I just introduced you to Andrew Gillum.
Oh, great.
By email. I don't know if you've seen it or not yet. But Andrew is a very, very old friend of mine. I've known him through People for the American Way, where he was the leader of young elected officials for over a decade. And I'm on the board of that organization. And so I've known Andrew personally. And I was really excited when he decided to run for Congress. And I'm sorry, to run for
governor.
He's the mayor of Tallahassee. And when he decided to run for governor, I was very, very excited about that. So he's one of the gubernatorial candidates for 2018 that we're supporting.
That's great. And I'm really impressed with him. I'll check the email and get in touch with him and hopefully get him on the show. We have a horrible situation here in Florida when it comes to the governor's race. And all the pundits, you know, the Chuck Todds of the world, are talking about it as if it's a race between Philip Levine, who is just terrific, and Gwen Graham. Gwen Graham,
yeah.
Who's
I mean, I hope everyone knows that you just said horrific and not terrific.
No, horrific. with an age, just truly horrible. He's a guy with a lot of money.
They're both neoliberals. They're both corporate Democrats. And then you've got the real Democrat, the progressive, who's right in line in the whole line from FDR and Eleanor Roosevelt. He's from that wing of the Democratic Party, as people call it, the Democratic wing of the Democratic Party. Gwen Graham has a record. She was in Congress for one term before she turned tail and ran away when it looked like it would be a tough race. She ran for her life, and she decides to run for governor. Who needs that? In any case, she has a record while she was in Congress, which is just terrible. She voted with the Republicans on everything.
Right.
She was, in fact, when she was in, she was one of the two or three Democrats who voted most frequently on crucial issues with the Republicans. That's who Gwen Graham is. Basically a Republican, a wealthy Republican from an influential family who thinks it's her turn to be governor now.
Right. And her father was actually pretty good.
Yes. Her father had some he wasn't great, but he was great on certain things.
Mm-hmm.
And he certainly had backbone, which she doesn't have. And he was a decent governor, better than most Southern governors by a long shot.
Yep. That's the way to put it. I'm asking about the governor's race because of what happened in Illinois. They had the same kind of issue where there was a decent progressive who lost out to the billionaire self-funder, right?
Yes. So Daniel Biss, an old friend of mine personally, who Blue America supported when he ran for the lower house, and then we supported him when he ran for the state senate, and then we supported him when he ran for governor as well. He came in second in a crowded race. He actually beat out Chris Kennedy who was I think Robert Kennedy's son or grandson or something. So he was in a funny situation. It wasn't funny, but he was in a tough situation with Pritzker, the guy who eventually won, is like a major billionaire. He spent unbelievable amounts of money on his campaign. The Republican is also a big billionaire who spent amazing amounts of money on his campaign. Chris Kennedy is, you know, very, very rich, and he spent lots of money. And Daniel, he's like us. He's just a regular guy from a regular family who does not have lots and lots of money and, you know, was raising $27 from lots and lots of supporters. But he couldn't keep up with Pritzker, who was just, you know, spending, you know, he would spend a few thousand. Biss would spend a few thousand. Pritzker would spend a few million. And it meant nothing to him. So he's the candidate. So people have been saying to me, well, what happens in November? What do I do? And in this case, I recommend to people that they vote for Pritzker. He's not that terrible. I didn't say anything negative about him, except that he's a rich establishment corporate Democrat. Vote for him instead of the much, much worse Republican.
Yeah.
By the way, the sitting Republican governor, he's running for reelection, almost lost to this crazy right-wing lunatic. So out of, I don't know, 600,000 votes that got cast, he only won by 20,000 votes.
Wow.
The person who almost beat him is this extremist, a complete Trump maniac. And she almost beat him. I was shocked to see those numbers.
That's scary.
I think Pritzker will have no trouble beating him. So we wouldn't endorse or raise money for someone like Pritzker in a million years. But, you know, when someone asks me, and they do sometimes, I would say, yeah, you know, vote for him. You know, just get rid of that Republican there. He'll, you know, he's going to be better than that. Don't give him money.
I hear you. Well, and hopefully, Illinois is a pretty Democratic state, so hopefully he'll win. And
it is a very Democratic state, and you know, he's definitely the favorite candidate, and I think he's going to be able to do it. You know, there was also some good news in Illinois, by the way. Chuy Garcia won by a landslide,
right?
So that's a big deal. He was running for Congress in the 4th congressional district, a Bernie-crat. And then there was an initiative on the ballot just for Cook County, which is the biggest county in Illinois by far. So that's where Chicago is, in Cook County. And they were asked whether marijuana should be legal or not. And that won by nearly 70%. So it was nearly, you know, a little less than 70% voted yes.
So is that binding? Does that make it legal? Or
It was non-binding, but there are a lot of people that want to make it legal statewide. And they're going to use that. The whole idea of putting that on the ballot was to use those numbers to persuade enough people, enough Democrats, to vote for it. And they hope to make it legal within a year.
Well, that's good news.
What? Yeah, that was good. You know, that kind of, to see those numbers like that, it was pretty amazing.
So what races are we looking at next? Do you have that handy?
May 8th, there are some important primaries, and two that I have in mind, in fact. One is in Indiana, right next door to Illinois, where Dan Cannon
He's
is,
been
is
on the show before. He's great.
He is absolutely amazing. That would be a real step up if he wins. And then the other one is in North Carolina, where Jenny Marshall is running to be the candidate to take on Virginia Fox. So I think we've talked about Virginia Fox in the past.
She's
remembers
nuts.
Matthew Shepard, that young gay guy who was crucified in Wyoming, might remember that when his grieving mother came to Congress, Fox accused her of all sorts of horrible things and said awful things about her son, that he got what he was coming to him. And she's just like one of the real monsters in Congress.
Yeah.
And Jenny is an incredible organizer who managed to help Bernie win in her part of the state. And, you know, she's running on a very Bernie-oriented platform.
Great.
She's a school teacher and a real good candidate, and Blue America is supporting her and helping her to raise money. So that's May 8th.
May 8th.
For our friends in Carolina.
Sounds good. Howie Klein of Down with Tyranny and the Blue America PAC. It's always a pleasure. Thank you so much, Howie.
Talk to you soon, Nicole.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye. Howie Klein, again, the link to Blue America and Down with Tyranny is at downwithtyranny.com.